We have a situation where we should be fighting to maintain what was accomplished in World War II. That is, we created the United Nations, and remember, we created the United Nations on the remains of Japanese fascism and militarism and German fascism and militarism, and establish a body, the United Nations, over the victory, over the ideas that were emanating from Japan and Germany. And we decided that with the Soviet Union gone, that there would be a unipolar world, a new world order, to quote Bush, the elder. therefore, the attention to the principles of the United Nations was removed. And there was a Russian general who was present when they were having their, Gorbachev was having his love affair with Ronald Reagan. It's interesting how now, at the time, everybody said Gorbachev is a young smarty pants and he knows what he's doing, and he shows the new healthy side of the Soviets and all that. And he's under his aegis, they signed agreements, and they decided to dissolve East Germany, and they create one Germany again. And a Russian general who was just part of the entourage is quoted as saying to the smart guys in the room, Gorbachev and others, we just lost World War II because Germany was not to become ever again a threat to its neighbors in Europe because it has a notion of where the lines ought to be, which it was put under simple restraint. It had a peace constitution. It said that German forces would never be engaged outside Germany ever again. It was a strictly military definition was that they were not to become an offensive power, not to have that capacity. But that went by the boards because they redefined Germany. They decided there would be one Germany, and they began to violate basically the agreements that ended World War II. They basically took away from Russia the vote on that question, yet Russia is one of the founders of the United Nations. Nobody here wants to remember that. Actually, I think probably we reached a stage where most people don't even know it. But there was the basic thing was there won't be Germany of the type that it was ever. And that would guarantee, it was said by the UN, peace and cooperation, the potential for it in Europe. Now move over to Japan. The same thing was said in the case of Japan. Japan had run havoc all over South Asia, and they had occupied, they went to war against China. We were very close to the anniversary of the Nanking, the Rape of Nanking, it's called. Thousands and thousands of Chinese were slaughtered by the Japanese, and they saw it as a necessary, since they were a superior people, by their definition at the time, these fascists and militarists, they were quite pleased with themselves, and they were at war along, by the way, Japan went to war on China without any any consequences in the West, largely. And so when Japan was defeated at a horrible cost, millions and millions of lives, when you compare the losses of the U.S. and Canada, it's just there's no comparison. All those lives that were lost, by the way, should not have happened because Japanese militarism shouldn't have been allowed to develop as it did. But the greatest loss was in China, Korea, and Philippines, elsewhere. And now we're in a situation where you can read the Globe and Mail and you would think that Japan is our best friend and that China is somehow a threat. And that's the policy. And they're going to keep repeating this really dangerous analysis, which doesn't recognize any longer what was accomplished in World War II and what was the United Nations was there to preserve. And that is, Japan would not ever again be permitted to extend its to define itself as a potentially offensive military power. But now in the United States Senate and the Congress and certainly in Canada and the mainstream media, there's a drumbeat to make Japan our spear aimed at China. And Japan has a new prime minister, and she is a extreme right wing. Her position politically is to the extreme right, and she very deliberately prodded and challenged China, and it involved her challenge to China involved the claim that should something happen in Taiwan, there is a political party in Taiwan that toys with declaring itself an independent country, and Taiwan is part of China, and I say that on the authority of the Canadian government, because the Canadian government recognizes China's sovereignty over Taiwan. We actually do. So does the United States. So China wants to know, why is it that you're all silent when this prime minister who has extreme right-wing connections? I'll give my favorite demonstration of that. There is a cemetery in Japan, its name I cannot tell you, but you can look it up, where they have some of the worst war criminals of World War II. These are generals. These are Category 1, I think they call it, the worst war criminals that were identified from all the years of the domination and conquest that Japan had engaged in, which was highly racialized. And it is considered verboten, pardon the German word, for any self-respecting person and a respecter of the United Nations and the victory over Japanese fascism, no one goes to that cemetery. It's like the SS men in Germany. People don't go to visit their graves. I mean, families, of course, but political people stay away from that. Well, she's a political person, the prime minister, and she goes there frequently. And when she does that, she's playing to the old dream of Japanese conquest or domination, because why else is she there at those graves? Is that Japan? Does that reflect her view of history? Well, the United Nations said that should not, that has to be crushed. It can't come back, but it is coming back. And as a matter of fact, the Canadian government and the West generally is urging it. And she is saying things that could get us all killed. Putting it simply, she could get us all killed because they're not playing. Taiwan is China. And U.S. ships, warships, Canadian warships, make it a point to sail in the Taiwan Straits between the mainland and China. And at any time, China could exercise its right of sovereignty to put a stop to that. They don't do it, but they do warn, don't do that. But we have this kind of sneaky philosophy. You can find it every day of the week in the Globe and Mail, actually, and particularly in the opinion pages, that it's okay to provoke or play games about identification of Taiwan. And we live in this kind of mad world of stupid terminology where they say, oh, China claims. Well, so does Canada. They contradict themselves because Taiwan is a part of Chinese sovereignty has been recognized by that other all practically every nation in the world. But when they write about it, they say, well, China claims. Well, Canada claimed and the United States claimed at one time for many years that Taiwan was China itself. On the mainland, there was the People's Republic of China, and on Taiwan, there was something called the Republic of China, and according to the United States and Canada and else others, it was the Republic of China stationed on Taiwan was China. That was the official position of our government, the U.S. government, that, of course, they said, there's this, the Kuomintang, the rival, political rival of the Communist Party of China, since they were chased out of the mainland and ended up on Taiwan, and they had the U.S. fleet to protect them, the pretense was that Taiwan was China. And Canada was perfectly happy with that. Now they turn around and because the United Nations functioned and the newly liberated colonies, those who declared independence and had their in Africa and South America elsewhere, well, Africa I should say, and Asia became nations in the United Nations, members of the UN. They said no, China has to be, the mainland has to be recognized as the government. So the Western powers who are afraid to enter into a fight over that, they did their best to prevent that from happening. But they had to give way. And so the UN actually functioned quite successfully. And mainland China was recognized as China in the United Nations, which is a wonderful victory and a demonstration of the wonderful project unleashed by the United Nations, where the member nations were strong enough to see to it that People's Republic of China, which was their friend, by the way, all of these states in Africa who won independence, knew that they always had a friend in the People's Republic, which always fought for them. So when they became members, they fought for China because China was one of the founders of the UN, and it was being represented by a rump state in Taiwan, which was you could say a false state, but by the way, it was at one point they were supposed to, according to all the Republicans in the Congress, they were supposed to liberate China, but it turned out they couldn't mount any kind of threat. The People's Republic has become a wonderful success and still a good friend of the developing countries. All of this is back to the point, which is, do we believe in UN Charter or not? And do we also recognize that we said of Japan, they cannot become a military force. They cannot have an offensive capacity. And the new prime minister says, oh, yes, we're going to have to do that. And then I will warn you that about 2 weeks ago, we had a threat occur, and it was encouraged by Washington and Ottawa. The Chinese were engaging in a military drill, and they were at sea, international waters, and it was all a scheduled drill, and nothing special about it. They are a founding nation of the United Nations. They have a right to be sure to protect what was accomplished in World War II. And lo and behold, the Japanese, with the type of military that they've been permitted to have, it doesn't have a great striking capacity as yet, but it's trying to develop it. But their planes, Japanese planes, flew into the airspace of a Chinese military exercise where they didn't belong at all. And the Chinese have pointed out, you have a prime minister in Japan who's talking as though she might want to engage with us, China, as though she has a right somehow to intervene on a matter that is an internal matter to China. And that is a flaming outrage. But Canada doesn't see its duty to remind Japan that the basis of the peace and the founding of the United Nations said you, Japan, are not going to have a offensive capacity, and you have a constitution which says that you believe in peace and respect for other people's territory, and that you're not going to try to develop an offensive capacity. Now, Canada and the United States are accomplices in this. They're encouraging this, and they're talking about alliances. They want to arrange, get a load of this. They want to get the Philippines and Japan and Australia to be part of a military, I can't use any other word, alliance. That is completely violates the agreement to World War II. So if we're going to keep the peace of World War II, we have to say, we should be saying, we're not going to permit this aggressive capacity for aggression from these two states. You know, no hard feelings, but they lost the war, and the war they waged was in the name of race and nationalism. That was the war they waged. So they were beaten, I think, rather badly. But because the Western powers, Western Empire, wants to cause havoc for a fellow member of the United Nations and a founding member of the Security Council, because they want to cause them a hard time, they're beginning to feed this chauvinism and this, I think the old-fashioned word was revanchist element. And this has to come to a halt. But Canada has to be asked again, what side are you on? We saw your entire parliament, the entire parliament, NDP, Green, Bloc, Conservatives, Liberals, leap to their feet when the Speaker of the Parliament said, this man up here that we're celebrating, he fought against Germany and he fought against the Russians. And he said he fought the Russians. And no one in the Parliament could bring themselves to remain seated when they all leaped to their feet, which means we have a lemming parliament and extremely dangerous. They all said, oh, gee, I didn't realize that's Trudeau's fault. No, it's your fault. You're the one who stood up. And it shows something kind of wrong. So it's that mentality that permits this return of old symbols and old racist and chauvinist language in Europe today. And that to my mind people say, oh, what use is the UN? You lose, and we're very close to the UN being coming apart. I wouldn't be surprised, actually, given the way things are evolving, if Trump were to pull the trigger on the UN and say he doesn't want to be there anymore, because he's throwing his weight around to say, for example, the G20 is going to have a meeting in South Africa. He says, well, I'm not going to that because the new South Africa, which has ended racism, is picking on white people in South Africa. So he wants to do the right thing and not attend the G20. That kind of mentality and conduct will destroy the UN. So we have a war now to bring back, save, I would say, the UN. And for those who want to break up the Security Council, I would say at the moment, it's never been a time we needed it more, actually. We have to face it. The basis of peace in the world is in the Security Council. And it's true, there are members. Russia is one and China is another that says the Security Council should be expanded. There should be representation, particularly for Africa, 1 billion people. It is the United States that's opposed to that. But it's a tangle, but it's better to have this tangle than to have it blown apart. And I come back. We have to make there should be a hard decision, and it should be stated clearly. And it's being, because the question is being asked by a major member of the Security Council, do you or do you not support the founding of the UN on the corpse of fascism and Nazism? Do you support that or not? Because the Prime Minister of Japan is saying that she feels like violating that agreement. And so do you agree with that or not? And by the way, when China says that, they never get an answer. She, by the way, is a sneak and a nasty piece of work. And I don't know why the Globe and others call her, you know, oh, she's a new Iron Lady. Do they mean, what, the Iron Cross? Or they mean fascism? They think it's somehow a compliment. China is asking, they said to Japan, answer this question. Do you accept that you still have a constitution makes you a pacifist constitution and a constitution that prohibits you from developing offensive capacity? Do you still apply that? Do you still believe that? And Japan's answer is, our policy has not changed. You were asked a direct question. Do you still adhere to that constitution, which is a pacifist constitution? And don't say our policy hasn't changed, because we heard you say that you think you could get involved in China, China's territory, our is sovereign territory of China. So answer us directly. And then over her head to the United States, and I hope Canada is being asked to take a position, they are saying, you tell us, what is your position? Because we're hearing funny things from U.S. and from Canada and France and others. Do you or do you not still believe in the founding points of the United Nations, particularly in regard to the two states that led the war, where it was an attempt at nationalist conquest over other peoples? So you, and the way we solved it was, you will not have offensive capacity again. Now, we want to know, to you, the United States, we want to know from you in France and in Canada, is that your position? Or are you going to play this game? And jump back to Europe. They took the wraps off, and they allowed Germany, to bomb Serbia. That's what they did. And it really got the blood flowing, as it were, in the veins of the German state. And the U.S. encouraged that. And I mentioned a while ago that the Japanese prime minister visits the graves of fascist war criminals. So she does to show. Now, the Japanese actually ought to face themselves and throw her out for doing that. But they haven't done it. But now look at the precedent. In Germany, when Ronald Reagan was starting this thing of, okay, there's going to be one Germany, and he went to see Kohl, there was an incident. And never forget it. Kohl said that one of the things they were going to do when Ronald Reagan visited him, they were going to visit a particular cemetery. And it was raised by the people around the world, but particularly by the Jewish leadership in Europe and in the United States, that that cemetery is famous for its SS people, some of whom had been SS people who had executed Canadians, executed Americans, and of course, with SS was the cutting edge of every nasty thing that the Nazis did. So Kohl said that he and Reagan would visit that cemetery. And so the World Jewish Congress and others arranged a meeting and said, please do not do that. Don't go to that cemetery. It sends a really dangerous signal. And Ronald Reagan listened to them. By the way, the whole thing was shown once. I remember watching it. The several very prominent Jewish spokespersons made the appeal directly to Reagan. Reagan sat in the room while the appeal was delivered to him. Then he didn't respond other than to nod and expect. Then he went there. So Kohl met with, obviously he was saying, we're going to have a new relation now, and you will join me in visiting a cemetery with SS big shots. And Reagan did it. So I hate to say this, but you know, these little cemetery visits are very significant. It happened for Germany, and they've already crossed the Rubicon, in my view, when they did that. But everybody said, well, you know, the main thing is we got to be close to Germany because they're going to protect us from Russia. And so now we've crossed the Rubicon, or are crossing it. This new prime minister, my guess is that somewhere down in the next few years, if not months, she will be going to visit the war criminals in the cemetery in Japan, and U.S. ambassador will be standing there beside her. It just seems like symbolically these little exercises go forward. So it's all by way of saying we have to have return to principles. And I want to hear Canada answer China's question and remind you, 1 billion people, the fastest growing economy in the world, certainly the most popular of the superpowers in terms of other states relating to it. And they're posing a question. And so if the answer is that we're going to support the Japanese prime minister, and if we're going to encourage German militarism now, we are actually making ourselves allies of the oldest problem we had, which led to World War II, with these two powers, would just destroy the United Nations, and we would go back to the idea that we will commit any sin, break all moral rules, and tear up what made the led to the creation of the United Nations. So these are dangerous and deep waters, I would say. I should throw in an issue where people talk about human rights. It's a favorite topic amongst liberals and people call themselves progressives. They say we have to be, you know, always fighting for human rights. So a recent victory, they called it, was the arrest of a Philippine leader, Duterte. So why was Duterte arrested by the International Criminal Court, which is dominated by Western powers? Why was Duterte arrested and has been in custody in The Hague? Hasn't been a trial. Actually, no, doesn't have a case has been made against him. But why is he there? He's there because he was a problem to the war makers. The people have plans to enlist the Philippines against China. And Duterte said loud and clear that he didn't agree with development of antagonistic relation with China. He said, I want good relations with the West, I want good relations with the East, and I don't intend to become part of a war effort. So what do you know? They decided to make a human rights case against him at the Hague, they arrested him, and because he would have been a problem in terms of their new policy, because he would be there and be opposing this warlike policy. So everybody ought to wake up and call on Canada to rejoin the UN with a little fervor and do their duty. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. If I'm right, it'll be 33, 45, 78. Coming up.